For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Heat Nation, welcome back into Believe in Miami Heat for another week. I'm your host, Joey Levin, with you as always. And once again, not alone. And I'll tell you why. Last week, we had two-time NBA champion Norris Cole on the program, and the bosses, they said the reaction from the people was so nice, we got to do it twice. So I got to bring back my guy, Norris Cole, for another week, a good week for the Miami Heat. We'll discuss it. Three wins in a row for the first time this year, 3-1 in the last four after our last podcast. Norris last week, he told me, he said, they got to go at least 3-1. They went 3-1. So, hey, first episode as a guest on the show, and Norris hitting the ball out of the park. So we're going to bring him back in. We're going to break down everything that happened this past week. Plus, we're going to talk a little bit about this 7-game road trip coming up. That is a big one for Miami. We're going to talk about all of it. We're going to break it all down. But first, before I bring my guy Norris back in, football might be over. We all know Super Bowl last weekend. Dolphins fans, you know, whatever you want to think, I think the GOAT conversation's over. It's over. Tom Brady, best ever. We can complain all we want. He is what he is. All right. Football's over. We're done talking about it. But NBA, college basketball, NHL, they're in full swing. And if you're betting, which I am, which you probably are, if you listen to, if you're a sports fan, you know, the only place you should be betting is betonline.ag. Now, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. So why would I give you my picks for tonight? I do have an early pick for Thursday night, and that's Pacers -3 against Detroit. Now, the Pistons, you'll say, wait, didn't they just beat Brooklyn? Didn't they just almost beat the Lakers? That's true. They've only won 6 games this year, and in the first 5, they got beat up in the next one. They haven't won 2 in a row this year. The Pistons are a bad team. I don't know why they keep beating these good teams, but the Pistons are a bad team. 3 points. Pacers getting 3 points. Take the Pacers. I'm taking the Pacers. Look, BetOnline, even they cover award shows. They cover TV shows, reality TV. I've never bet on that stuff. I can't even imagine how you would. But hey, if that's your thing, go for it. They have hundreds of prop bets, real-time odds on almost anything you can imagine. And the 24-hour casino, I always tell you about the 24-hour casino. So head to the website, use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's a lot of money. That's betonline.ag. BetOnline, they are your sports book, online sportsbook experts. I tell you every week. You already know. All right, here we go. Mentioned off the top, 2-time NBA champion, grinding it out with us again this week. It's midnight in France where he's at, but that doesn't matter because he's ready to talk Miami Heat basketball. It looks like he might be muted on his iPad right now. Norris, unmute. There he is. He's back. Here we go. Here we go. Norris, welcome back, baby. What's going on?
Thank you. Glad to be back. We had to do it twice, like how we won it back in the day. Back to back.
2 times for the 2-time champ. There it is.
Absolutely.
So you heard my intro. You heard my little spiel there off the top. Last week, we looked ahead at the schedule. We said we got 2 against Wizards, 2 against the Knicks. Got to win these games. And we said at least 3-1, if not 4-0. So they start off, what do? Lay an egg against the Wizards.
Yeah.
But then they reel off 3 straight, right? So blowout win against the Wizards. And then 2 close ones against the Knicks, including last night. As we're recording this on Wednesday, last night, Tuesday night, a 2-point win, close game. So first 3-game win streak of the season, 1 game out of the 8 seed in the playoffs at this point is what we're looking at. Can you take anything away from this past week in terms of pushing it forward, the momentum, turning things around? Did you see a different Heat team, or was it maybe a little of the same playing, you know, the Wizards and the Knicks?
Well, anytime you win 3 in a row, that's a good thing. So you take the positive. It doesn't matter that, you know, the wins were not very dominant. All that matters is you got the win. And so you have to be happy about that. They moved up. They're closer to catching that eighth seed, which I believe eventually they're going to, you know, possibly even get up to maybe a 7 or 6 seed. That's, you know, I believe that's very possible. Jimmy Butler obviously is back healthy, 26-10 last game. The Heat do what they always talk about doing, even when I was there, grind it out. Grind it out. They grind games out. They grind the season out. They just fight, man. And so I believe that they can – they should be, you know, I don't want to say happy, but they should look positive at this 3-game win streak. I would.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, any win streak at this point, because this is only their second win streak of the season. The last one was 2 games. So, yeah, at this point, any win streak. You know, you mentioned Jimmy, and that's good. That's a good place to actually start off of this 4-game streak. So the 26-10, but he's still, I'll tell you, I harp on this a lot, and you're going to learn this about me. He's such a weird player to me, and he always has been, but it seems like it's just as much this year. So he had the 26-10. Uh-huh. I think in one of the Wizards.
Eight rebounds.
Oh, no, he's – so over the last four, he's averaging 19, 8 rebounds, 9 assists. But he's only taking 11 shots a game, but he's shooting 11 free throws. So really, that's more like 15 shots a game. So I still have this question, and it goes to my concerns about not really major concerns, because still 24 games, so we still have some time. You know, there's still time to work things out.
Plenty of time.
But the way the Heat's offense runs right now, it strikes me. It strikes me when I'm watching teams defend them that they're defending them as if there's no go-to scorer, because it's really, when you look at the two best players, Bam and Jimmy, I think teams right now at this point, the reason why the Heat turn the ball over so much, a lot of times it seems like teams know, like, every player on this team's looking to pass first.
Well, part of their culture right now is moving the ball. And part of what makes them different and good is that you can't necessarily take one player out of the game, even though we know Jimmy Butler is the key.
Sure.
It's clear as day, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo are the key to their team. But they don't have to, you know, have a one player shoot 15 to 17 shots a game right now. That's, you know, I don't think even last year they didn't have a player that attempted, you know, 15 or more shots. So they've gotten used to this style of play. And as you can see, Olynyk last night stepped up big. You know, Tyler Hero, he has his moments. So when they play that way, everyone's always in rhythm. Everyone else is always a threat to get hot. And then we all know that, you know, in the biggest moments, you know Jimmy's going to be there. But what I like specifically, though, is their defense. They were able to win a game where they shot under 40%. They found that. That's called finding a way to win. And when you start talking about long playoff stretches, at some point, you just have to find a way. And so that's why I say this win against the Knicks, even though it wasn't impressive from a scoring standpoint, it was impressive that they still found a way to win. And I think Jimmy, as the season is going to go on, I think he's going to score a little bit more. But I think he, like I said last week, he has a great pulse on his guys. And I think he knows when he needs to go high octane offense and when he just needs to do what he's doing, facilitate and score when the opportunity presents itself rather than force it.
Do you, cause I've always felt like when you look at championship teams, there's a guy, I mean, there's very few, I mean, maybe the Pistons, right? That's probably the last time there was a team where there wasn't a guy, right?
Right.
If not multiple of those guys. And obviously
but they did have a guy on the Pistons. They just, I mean,
they had 5 all-stars. They just,
yeah, but yeah. Chauncey Billups at the end of the game was the guy.
Right.
There's no question about that.
Sure. Well, and at the end of the game for the Heat, Jimmy's the guy. Right. But I look at the teams that the Heat are going to be competing with. And I bring this up all the time, which is just like, they have that guy that, you know, like when everything else fails, you always know he's going to be assertive to score the ball. And I just sometimes worry, like, even though Jimmy, we know when he wants to turn it on, he's going to turn it on. But like you even said last week, like, all right, it's time for him to turn it on. And he did for a couple of these games, but then he didn't for a couple of the games. So it's like still kind of the up and down thing with him.
Well, you know what I'm appreciating about it, though? everyone in the NBA seems to start trying to play the same. And so I like it that the Heat are playing different. You know, everyone is launching as many threes as they can. No mid-range, no post-up, you know. Having, like you said, one or two guys shoot all the balls on the team and then everybody else get the scraps. I like the fact that the Heat play a different style. To me, it makes the game more interesting when you have contrasting styles play. Yeah. And so I think that the Heat's thing is they want to keep the game close and then they know they have a closer in Jimmy. And so as long as the games are close, as long as the games are competitive, they know that Jimmy is going to be there. And they also know that they have, you know, like I said, Bam is going to be there, especially defensively. And then, you know, the young hero, he's not scared to.
Oh, he's playing great. He's playing.
He's not scared to, you know, make a big shot or two. So I think that their style of play is more team oriented. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, get the ball into their playmaker, Jimmy's hands. And I'm okay with that because I sometimes get tired of seeing everybody play the same style. I like seeing contrasting styles.
Oh, I don't. That's true. I do. I just like some of these games where I'm like, couldn't you just blow out the Wizards twice? Like, couldn't you, like if Jimmy go get 30 and let's just blow it. Let's just, I mean, like
who's to say if he did that though, that they would do that. Cause that's
could true. It's true.
Because you got to think they're not playing a position. Most teams where they have high octane scores, they have a lot of possessions in the game, a lot of possessions. If you look at their possessions, they're not trying to have the most possessions. They're trying to have efficient possessions where they make the team defend for 15, 20 seconds of the shot clock. That's what the Heat do. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, that cuts down on high octane scoring.
Yeah. And one of the things that you hit on for sure is like I've seen a lot of people talking about how the Heat's 3-point defense is a mess. And it is a little bit like, look, number, like statistically speaking, they're near the bottom of the league in 3-point percentage defense and opponents. I think they're giving up the second most threes to any team in the league. But look, these last four games, whether it's the Knicks or the Wizards, they gave up 100 points or no, they gave up 103, 95, 103, and 96. That's still great defense in the NBA. If teams are scoring 96 to 102, 103 points, that's great defense. And this is just what the Heat do, right? No points in the paint. They let you get your shots. It seems like the concern that people have about the Heat's 3-point. Now, perimeter defense-wise, they can get better. Like their guards are struggling a little bit to guard on the perimeter. But I think the 3-point shooting is not as big of a concern, opponent 3-point shooting, as people think. That's what the Heat want you to do. Statistically, teams are not always going to shoot great from three. But they're always going to shoot great in the paint. That's why you got to eliminate the paint, right?
Well, when you give up the paint, that's when you give up uncontested threes.
Right.
And so that's why the Heat, you know, they never want to give up the paint, because when you give up the paint, you collapse the defense. There's no rules for that. And so teams that get into the paint normally get uncontested threes. And so what the Heat do, they take away the paint. They try to, and then they want you to take contested threes. And contested threes are a much lower percentage. And I believe that as their rotations get better and play more games, they're going to move higher in the defensive rankings.
Yep. I mean, yeah, I look at the two things that people that, I mean, if you're looking at it from a continuity and a standpoint of getting things going, the 3-point defense and the turnovers, right? They're still at the top of the league in the turnovers and the 3-point defense. Is there one or the other that would be 25 games into the season that you would say it's a little more concerned? Like, to me, the turnovers are still a little more concerning because I don't understand them. Like, I understand the threes. Teams are just – there's a little bit, you know, Tyler, Duncan, Goran, even though Goran's been missing games, they're not the greatest perimeter defenders, so the closeout's not great. It's not – but I think that'll come back. The turnover still, to me,
yeah,
there's just something about it. I watch the games, and I'm just – and I do think – and I don't know if you agree with this. I do think there's something to the fact that teams are expecting them to drive to pass instead of drive to score a lot of times now. So guys are driving, and like not just Jimmy, Tyler Hero does it. Goran does it a lot of times. They're driving, they're getting into the paint and kicking out. And I understand that they're driving kick. They're looking for open threes.
Right.
But there are a lot of opportunities that I'm seeing from them where it's just like, hey, you're in the paint, dude, get fouled or go to the rim or get a bucket. Like, just make the defense stay honest. Cause I think it looks to me like there's a lot of times where they understand. Like when I was at Florida State, and I'll bring up an example, when we played Duke, when Greg Paulus was there, I don't know if you remember Greg Paulus.
Yes, sir.
He was a guy who literally on our scouting report, it was like, if he drives, don't even guard him. Cause he's passing. Like he's passing the ball. He will not take a shot in the paint. He is driving to kick. And I almost feel like sometimes with the Heat right now, just the way they're playing, trying to get the offense going, teams are saying, well, you know, Jimmy's not going to score until later in the game. So, you know, play the passing lanes a little more when he drives, or Goron's looking to set up those lobs to Bam and Precious. Could that be a thing? Could that be part of what other than that, the turnover, it's not like they're playing terrible offense. They're not going one-on-one a ton. They're still playing within their offense, but they're still turning the ball over a ton.
Yeah, well, turnovers for sure have to be taken care of. That's one thing that is a cause for concern, you know, on any team. You have to take care of the turnovers. But the defensive three-point percentage, that has to, you know, they have to rise in the defensive rankings. You know, they have to start defending better. But offensively, I think that, yeah, you're right. Sometimes they do need to be more aggressive to score, because a bad shot is better than a bad turnover.
Totally.
I mean, I know sometimes a shot can be – I heard coaches say a bad shot is just like a turnover, but I'm pretty sure if you ask any coach, what would you rather have, a guy shoot a shot or turn it over? You'd rather have a guy shoot a shot. At least you have a chance at getting a rebound. When you turn it over, you have no chance of setting up your defense.
Right,
and so,
exactly.
So, when I believe that they are conscious. I believe that they are conscious of it, and I believe that hopefully, you know, they'll make the adjustment. But they've been winning. They've won 3 games in a row. They've been able to get guys healthy. And I believe that they're going to keep playing this style, because this style forces teams to defend. It forces teams to stay at home. And I believe this is like chess. It's not checkers. Mm-hmm. This is a long season. They're not playing for the short term. They can't show all their cards right now. And one thing I know, I remember when I played, you know, for the Heat, and we did not make an adjustment against a certain team. Like, we would just show every time, mm-hmm, and try to get back. And the team beat us multiple times in the regular season. And some of the guys was like, man, why don't we adjust? And Spo was like, no, we're going to keep showing. We're going to keep working on this. We're going to keep doing this, knowing that we was going to have to see that team again in the playoffs. And when we saw them in the playoffs, we did something different than what we showed them in the regular season. Instead of showing, we did some different things. And so – I believe that they're just working on their habits right now. Drive and kick, drive point. We call it 0.5. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't got it, 0.5, swing it, drive and kick. And I think that's just them working on their habits. But Spo's a pretty bright guy. And I believe I believe that as the season gets longer and they start to see where they lie in the playoffs, you know, they're only going to show certain things in the regular season. You can't show all your cards. Like, you know.
Right. Yeah, totally. What you said about bad shot being better than a bad turnover. Look, obviously you played professionally and in college. So I never played, but I was around coaches and especially in the NBA. Look, there's no doubt. Like, it's not even a question. I mean, because at least the best coach I ever worked for, Steve Clifford, like when I was in Charlotte, those last few years were when we actually made the playoffs.
Uh-huh.
We didn't I don't know how you guys did it most of your years, but we didn't send guys to the offensive glass. So at least we knew when a shot was going up, we were getting back and you could set your defense. Like, the most important thing to us was don't give up easy buckets in transition. And
right,
part of what the Heat struggle right now is they're giving up a ton of points in transition because of the turnovers. But if you take a tough shot, at least, you know, shots up, get back, everybody else get back, or one person go to the glass and 3 people, whatever it is, get back. But if you have a turnover, no one knows the turnover is coming, so you can't get back. And that's part of why the Heat's defense is it's not even bad right now. Like, it's actually, I think the numbers lie a little bit from what people see defensively. I think their half court defense is incredible.
It's amazing. Right now. Yeah,
it's
amazing.
Really good. The 3-point stuff, I think, will get back to where it needs to be. But being the best paint defense team in the league is what they want to do. It sticks to what their plan has always been. And I think, to me, the turnover thing will help the defense. I think they go hand in hand, right? You don't turn the ball over. You don't give up easy buckets.
That's very true. They go hand in hand. When you don't turn the ball over, you're able to set your defense, and the Heat's defense is very, very solid right now.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get better because, you know, when you have Jimmy defending and you have Bam anchoring the defense, it's tough to score on that team. And so I believe that, like you said, being more aggressive to score and not, you know, making those passing – because a lot of the turnovers are where they're trying to make a pass.
And the lobs too. And I'll tell you, I don't know if you noticed this, but I feel like teams know it's coming now, other than out of timeouts, right? When they draw up a lob out of a pick and roll, out of a timeout or off a dribble handoff, coming off when guys are playing up too, when the big is playing up too much and Bam goes off the backside or Precious and they throw that lob.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like our guys start to fall in love with that. And I've seen a number of turnovers, at least one a game, where they're trying to get that lob. It's just not there. And it's just being too... to a point where it's like, dude, you had a floater or you could go put your body into them and get a foul. Like, I think maybe that'll get cleaned up. Maybe
it will. I'm sure they show it in film. I'm pretty sure they show it in film.
Yeah.
It's just about this game plan discipline and just keep harping on it.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you can do. You keep, you know, you have your game plan discipline, you execute it and, you know, just keep harping on it. Keep the turnovers down, fellas. Keep the turnovers down, fellas. It's better to not make the play if you're not sure than to try to make the play and then not be there and then turn it over.
Yep. So the thing that always happens, especially with the Heat, because it's the Heat, it's Pat Riley, is the I talked about it last week when we were on here, but last week I was talking major moves, right? Like I talked about the Brad Beal thing, which it looks like it looks like it's probably not happening. If you were going to make a move right now to help this roster, not a major thing, just a role player, someone to come in, would you say we need to go get another perimeter defender that can bring us what Avery Bradley's supposed to bring us and probably will bring us when he's healthy? Or would you say we got Kelly O is playing, he's up and down, but he's really not a starter. We need somebody who can defend and shoot the ball like Jay did. What do you think would be more of an important, because something's going to happen. I have no doubt in my mind. I just can't imagine this being the roster. It happens every year with Pat. They're on a 7-game road trip now. It might happen during this road trip. He's done it in the past. Which one would you think would be more of the priority if you were looking at this roster? I could tell you what I think.
Well, let me know what you think. Then I'll let you know what I think. Because I have something about that.
I think unequivocally it's Kelly Olynyk, or a four that can take him and put him back where he's best, which is being a spark off the bench and potentially a spot starter if you need him. He's shooting a career high in 3-point attempts and he's shooting a career low percentage. Like he shot great last game. The games before that, he shot terrible. He's up and down. Like one game, it's great. One game, it's not. Over the last four games, he's shooting 8 threes a game. You tell me you think you're winning winning consistently with Kelly Olynyk shooting 8 threes. He's a good player, but I don't think you can have that guy shoot. I don't think you can have him shooting 8 threes a game. And if they're going to continue to play the way they're playing, I mean.
Well, I'll just say this. You know, I'm sure his job is to shoot, you know, when he's in the game. And so, you know, I'm not going to bash K. But if I did have to make an upgrade to the roster, it would be to bring in a 3-4 man, sort of like a Thaddeus Young, a guy who can shoot the ball, but who can also defend at a high level, who's athletic, who can play fast or who can play in the half court, and who has a little bit of playoff experience as well. So I believe a player like that, he's sort of like a – Thaddeus Young is sort of
a great passer.
Yeah, I'm about to say he can facilitate.
Yeah.
He can sort of be like what they thought Jay Crowder was going to be last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can come in, you know, he can handle the ball if he needs to. He can defend, you know, multiple positions, and he can shoot the three to keep spacing on the floor. I think a guy like Thaddeus Young could be, you know, a move that could possibly be made. But if they don't make a move, I still believe that they can make a playoff run, even with Kelly O.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
it may not be.
I want to make it. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, I don't want to make it clear. I'm not. I don't dislike Kelly Olynyk. I just think he's better suited coming off the bench, giving you 20 minutes a game as a spot. As you know,
Yeah.
Even he, it depends, situational too, right? Like he could situational be Bam, starter. Some games he could be Bam's backup. Some games he could be with playing next to Bam. It, you know, it just depends on if Bam needs a rest. Maybe he's the guy. Like maybe Precious is not ready to play a ton of minutes as a rookie, and Kelly Olynyk now becomes your backup at the four and the five. Like I just think coming off the bench, it gives you more depth. It gives you more flexibility, and you're not banking on a guy who's never taken eight threes a game to be that guy constantly.
Exactly.
I like Kelly Olynyk.
I understand exactly what you mean. That's why I say a guy like Thaddeus Young would be a real interesting piece if he was to come to Miami. That would be something that could be very interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one guy. There is a guy now that's out there, an Eastern Conference guy. Just a lot of talk happening right now. And I think I could see it happening, but I want to see what you think. There's a lot of talk out there that Kyle Lowry could get moved from Toronto.
I've been hearing that.
That Toronto is making their weighing whether do they want to be a low seed playoff team, or is it time to just say we're going all in on a rebuild. Now, the problem with Toronto saying we're going all in on a rebuild is they just maxed out Pascal Siakam. They just gave Fred VanVleet a giant contract, and they just gave OG Anunoby a giant contract. So I don't know what they're rebuilding with. They don't have a ton of money, but hey, if they want to send Kyle Lowry down to South Beach, now that you talk about,
but what would they require? What would they ask for would be the thing, because the Heat, one thing the Heat have going for them, they have a good young nucleus of talent.
I think you could get, I think, and this is total speculation, I think you could even, you probably have to even out the money. So it'd probably be Iguodala and one of the other expiring contracts, because Iggy's got $15 million expiring.
But who though?
It would be another expiring contract, so it might be Kelly O. But I'm sure another piece would get moved. I'm assuming someone else would come back with Kyle Lowry. I don't think it would be
I'm just saying that because you don't want to give up your young nucleus.
No, I don't think you'd.
Kyler.
No way.
Obviously, you're not going to give up Bam. You don't want to give up, if you don't have to, you don't want to give up Duncan.
I don't think so
you have to, but you don't really want to get those three young guys or even Kendrick Nunn. Like, he was in the running of rookie.
K-Nunn might be the one. He might be the one.
For Kyle Lowry, I guess you could, because he's a championship solidified. You
know? And he's 34, so I don't think they would demand. I think if you gave him Nunn, a first round pick, and an expiring deal to make the money work, I think you could get it done. It seems like that's because of his age. If he was 30,
you would give up a first round draft pick,
heavily protected. I think if you're trying to, if you're also trying to say like, we got to maximize Jimmy's time, because Jimmy's not young either. Obviously, I don't think he's anywhere near the end of his peak or anything, but like, he's not young. I think they want to maximize what they can with him. Now, you may not have to give up a first round pick, because Kay Lowry's an expiring contract too. So, but it's just a matter of, you know, if you're the Heat and you're looking around, here's why I also think it's a possibility. Why wouldn't the Heat have gone out and gotten Derrick Rose? I mean, the Knicks gave up Dennis Smith Jr. and a second round pick and got Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose would be very good for the Heat.
But once again, what would you have to give up
to get Derrick Rose?
Yeah.
I mean, probably Kendrick Nunn in a second round pick. I mean, that's essentially what the Knicks gave up.
Yeah, and you know, no, I'm just saying, because Kendrick Nunn is a guy that they brought up. They've developed him.
Yeah.
Duncan Robinson are guys that have been brought up through the system. They've been heavily invested in those guys. So, you know, they're not going to just give up on those guys easy, unless it's a guy that can really be a changing point, you know.
Kyle Lowry could be for this team, because all the things that we're talking about, a lot of the things that we're talking about, perimeter defense, willingness to score, three-point shooting, he brings all of it. He does all those things. And also, he's averaged like, I think, 6 or 7 assists a game in his career. He's obviously a willing facilitator. And like you said, he's a champion. And He's known for being a tougher, like a defensive minded type point guard. I feel like he would fit in.
Yeah, he would definitely fit the Heat culture, I believe. He probably had to lose a little bit of weight. They don't play that, but.
I was going to say the same thing, but I wasn't really sure.
He's going to have to, tighten that part up. But yeah, I think you're right. His championship pedigree could possibly make things more interesting. But the group that they have, man, I believe that you have time. You don't have to make the trade right now. And Pat Riley knows that. He's watching, but I don't think that – I mean, they won three in a row. What's to say they win the next three out of the next four or next four out of the next five and they're right in – they're right back, in the playoffs and, things start to go well for them. Yeah. I don't think that they need a – I don't think there's a blockbuster move to be made this year anyway right now. And so if it's not a blockbuster move to be made, go give these guys a chance. They got there last year. Give them another chance,
Yeah. They got to get at least to the sixth seed because don't forget the 7-8 is the play-in this year. So now
– that's for sure. But let me tell you something. The Heat don't care about doing things the hard way. They just want to get in. Because once they get in, they're a hard out for any team they play.
Totally.
Absolutely. So, obviously they will want to get higher, as high as possible, but nobody wants to play the Heat. If they're the 8th seed or if they're the 2 seed or the 1 seed, nobody wants to play them in the first round.
Yeah, no. Absolutely not. Especially like we were talking about the East last week and how the East is so much better. But like, think about it. After you got Philly, Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Boston, and the Pacers are good. But after that, the East is not great. So if you're one of those teams and you end up having to play a 6 seed Heat,
That's brutal.
You know what I mean? If you're the Nets and you got to play the Heat in the first round, that's rough. I think the Nets will end up well. I don't know. Philly's playing great basketball. I think there's no question right now to me at this point in the season, Joel Embiid's MVP, what he's doing.
No question.
I don't think there's a question. I know people will say LeBron. You're going
to
say LeBron.
I'm about to say that young man out there in Los Angeles by the name of LeBron.
I'll tell you this. If it is LeBron, I have no problem with it. But I've watched every team in the league this year, and I think from top to bottom, there's the Lakers and there's everybody else right now. And a lot of that is because of LeBron. But they do have a guy named Anthony Davis who is another top five player in the league. Here's what I'll say about Philly.
He hasn't played like a top five player in the league.
That's true. That's true. I will say this about Philly. I've watched Philly when Joel Embiid doesn't play, and that team is terrible when he is not on the floor. But I know what you're going to say. If the LeBron wasn't on the Lakers, what would happen, right?
And when LeBron was in the East – that was the case every time, every team he played for. But somehow they came up with – they didn't give him MVP. When he didn't play
– there's no doubt.
Different. When he didn't play Cavaliers, then when he goes to the West, and now his team is always in first place. But now we give it to Giannis every year because he statistically kills it. Giannis, and this year, Joel Embiid is killing it. Look, the double standard for LeBron not getting MVP, man.
LeBron could get it every year because.
Let's stop saying it. Let's go ahead and give it to him.
I don't have a vote. I don't have a vote, but if I did, I think right now I'd still give it
to him. And Joel Embiid too, though. Joel Embiid is having an MVP caliber. I can't lie, he is. But what LeBron is doing in the Western Conference at this age, when most people say, "Oh, he's in the East," that's why he's doing what he's doing. Well, now he's out west and he's still doing it. And so let's go ahead and give him the roses while he can.
We'll see. We're 25 games. 25 games. 25 games. We'll see how it happens because there's also the chance that Philly regresses because they're playing. Now they're actually doing what I thought they'd do with Doc Rivers. I thought, okay, Doc's going to go. They're going to win a ton of regular season games. Let's see how they play in the playoffs, but they're going to win a ton of regular season games. And my problem with Embiid actually watching them, we don't have to talk a ton about the Sixers, but he's still not in shape. I watch these games. He's dominant. He's still not in shape. Like he gets tired easily. He gets back to backs. You could tell he's not the same. So we'll see how game 60, game 65, if he's still doing what he's doing now.
He has to watch that. They really have to watch that.
Yeah. So anyways, back to back to Miami. So, I wanted to ask you about Jimmy, the Jimmy thing. So last night in the game, Jimmy gets fouled at the end of the game, down one.
And he's peekaboo.
He's rolling around on the floor and the announcer's like, oh, I hope he's okay. I hope he's okay. And then he peeks out of the, I don't know, he's like, he peeks out of the side of his eye. Yeah. Like, are they looking yet? Are they looking yet? Oh, no. Did you? I love it.
Well, you know, that's just part of having fun in the game, man.
Yeah. I love gamesmanship. I love anything you can do to get it. What do you think about flop? Like, people hate flopping. I don't care. I honestly don't, because if you flop and your team wins a game and you were a game out of the playoffs and you needed that game to win and the flop got you the win, hey, man, gamesmanship is gamesmanship to me.
Yeah, I don't like all the flopping.
I think it was Gary Trent Jr. did a couple weeks ago where he like dove out of bounds.
I think there's a way to draw fouls. You can draw fouls, but the over exaggeration, I'm not with that. I'm not with the
over. But what about what Jimmy did?
And I believe it's not on the players though. It's on the referees to start understanding it and not calling it. Yeah. Because the players are only going to do what you allow them to do. And so because they allow flopping and they don't call it consistently, or they call the foul and then they go back and say, well, in the 2-minute report, oh, that was a bad call. Well, you should have called that in the game. You cost the team 2 to 4 points for them flopping. So I believe it's on the refs not to call the fouls when guys are flopping. And, you know, that'll stop some of the flopping because I don't like it. Guys out there.
Okay, so what do you think about what Jimmy did? Jimmy was trying to get them to call. I think he was trying to get them to call flagrant. They called a foul. I think he was trying to get them to call flagrant.
I mean, hey, you, as a player, you do whatever was in the rules of the game. And so if the rules allow you to do it and the referee fall for it, if they fall for it, then
that's always been my thought on it. It's just like, hey, I get. And also, the league fines you now. If they feel like it was a bad flop, they'll fine you. So now it's even more so. I'm like, hey, if a player
is good, but the fine doesn't change the outcome of the game.
I know that's my thing. And so I'm like, but I'm also like,
you got to not call it, because if you come back after the game and say, yeah, he flopped, but hey, so what? He shot 2 free throws. Those 2 free throws made us lose the game. Like, no one wants to after the fact. You know, we want it to be called in real time.
Yeah.
And vice versa. You know, and vice versa.
Yeah. I know you didn't play with Jimmy, but did you ever work out? Did like an off season? You ever work out with Jimmy? Because I know
I did.
You
guys had
your workout
we train
guy. Right?
We train with some of the same guys though.
Right.
Train with Remy workouts.
Right.
Shout out to Remy workouts. And I've also trained with the guy he first trained with, Chris Johnson.
Right. Okay. I was just wondering if you knew
some of the best trainers out there, by the way.
Of course. I know. Went to high school with Remy, and I met Chris back in the day when I worked in the NBA. So, yeah, I know both of them, the two of the best. But I just was wondering, because I'm always interested to hear people who have been around him, like his mindset, because he obviously seems he's so intense, but then he's a joker. Like, he's got like this – he seems like a very complex type of dude.
Well, one thing he understands, that basketball is only part of his life. And that's where people got to understand. When he's out there on the court, he's this – ferocious as they come. You know, he's a high level competitor, which you have to be in this league if you want to be somebody. But, you know, off the court, you know, he likes his country music. You know, he likes to, you know,
big face do whatever.
He likes his wine and all of that. And that's just part of him not being defined only by basketball, you know, and that's important to be able to have a life outside of this game, because one day, you know, you won't be playing this game. So it's good that a person can be confident and have an identity outside the game. And that's all Jimmy's showing. He has an identity other than basketball. And that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is cool. And it's cool that he's finally ended up in a place where it's like, he's embraced for what he is. Cause you've been with multiple organizations. I worked for multiple organizations. It doesn't work everywhere. Like, there's a lot of places
it works at all winning organizations. I'm going to tell you that.
Okay. That's fair. I've never worked for one. So.
Jim, trust me, winning organizations would appreciate Jimmy, because listen, when we talk about championship level, you have to be dog eat dog. Like, you have to be intense. You have to be very rugged. That's the only way to compete at the highest of highest level when you talk about championship. And so the places that Jimmy went was not of championship pedigree. And so
at least at the time that he was there, when he was there, because obviously Chicago.
I'm not talking about Chicago because
Chicago. Oh, you're talking about after Chicago. After
Chicago accepted him as who he was. And Chicago was
in until the until Tibbs was gone, and then
Chicago was in contention every year because of that.
Yeah,
it was in contention. So the places that when he went to the places that was not championship contending or trying to, he stuck out different because he's a lion, and when a lion is with guys that are not lions, it's gonna look different. That's just a simple way. That's just, I'm not going to call nobody no name. I'm just going to say when a lion is not with lions, a lion is going to stick out. And so, and Jimmy's a lion, and the Miami Heat organization is about lions. They want tough guys. They want guys that's going to be willing to put it out there, and they don't want a bunch of choir boys. You know, they want guys that's going to mix it up.
It's a good trend. I'm glad you're bringing it back to where I had one last thing on this current, on this, this stretch and the way this season's gone, because you're talking about lions, right? There's a lion sitting on the bench. He doesn't play, but
he's an OG.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to him on the radio the other day, and you just see him on the bench, and you know, they were asking him like, "What did you say to your team?" And he's like, "Well, I said the same thing to the team that I said to Spo," and he's just basically talking about how we got to get to. But I was just like, I was thinking like when you were there. What he had already won a title, right? The first title. Yep. So, and he'd been with the organization from the beginning. Was he the same type with LeBron and Bosch and Wade and all them there? Was he this guy? Has he always been this much of a leader? Well, has he sort of embraced it more as he's gotten older?
He's grown into being a much better leader. UD is the definition of growth. He's grown and became more mature every season. And the team, our championship team, we govern each other. We were all, well, I wasn't, but everyone else on the team, they were vets.
Right.
And so they held each other to a standard and we could govern ourselves. On this team, the last few years that UD has been on, these are young guys. He's a vet by far on the team. And so he plays a different part. You know, he has to guide some of the guys. He has to talk about them, talk to those guys a certain way in order so that they understand and show them the day-to-day grind that it takes. You know, on our Heat team, we all knew the expectations. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew the expectation, top to bottom. And so we governed ourselves accordingly. And so his growth and mature process has been great to see. You know, he went from, you know, he's the all-time leading rebounder. You know, that pick and pop medium range, you know, that's UD all day, every day. He makes that with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
That his post defense is textbook, straight out of a textbook. And so, you know, his knowledge of the game, he's, as he gets older, he's just passing it down. He don't hurt as many people as he used to, you know. Don't get it twisted though. Don't get it twisted. He will punish you now, you know, out there on the court. If he get out there and play, you know, will box you out and put you in the third row.
Hey, but you got six fouls for a reason at that age. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. But you know, now he's, you know, he's has more of a big brother role.
Yeah.
You know, but he's ready. He's always ready though.
Isn't it crazy though? You mentioned like that mid-range. Isn't it crazy how like it was so effective, right? He won a championship, multiple championships, being a guy who did that. And that short corner, like 15-foot jumper is like eliminated. No one does it anymore. It's just so easy. I mean, not easy. Obviously, it's not easy, but like UD.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No one's going to lie and say UD was the most talented player to ever play basketball, but he figured out like, hey, I can make this shot every time. And he made a career off of that and playing defense, and no one does it anymore.
Hey, listen, I'm still trying to figure out how to lead transition from that.
Yeah,
I don't understand it, and I'm not gonna never understand it. But
like him and David West, the same thing, like that elbow jumper.
And I mean, plenty of people. You got Garnett. You got LaMarcus Aldridge, just one of the few that still shoots.
He still does it.
Dirk Nowitzki, all of those guys. You know, that makes the pick and roll much harder to guard when a guy can pick and pop to 17 feet and to the three, or pick and pop, or pick and roll, or short roll. Now it's just pick and pop.
Yep. Yep. It's crazy. You know who roll? You know, actually, who I was watching the other day who rolls hard to the rim like almost every time, and he can shoot it. John Collins from Atlanta. When he's
talented.
He has a crazy type of athleticism. It's weird. He's like spring loaded. Like
he's a top tier. He's a top percentile athlete.
Oh my God, it's crazy. It's wild. I actually interviewed him last year. I don't remember when it was. This might have been a couple. Whenever he was in the dunk contest, and he was talking to me about practicing his dunks with Vince Carter. And then he was in Atlanta with Vince and Dominique Wilkins. And he was just explaining to me how they were like giving him advice for the dunk contest. I'm like, God, this dude might be one of the top two or three dunkers. Like when he jumps, it's crazy, but he rolls hard. He's one of the few that I see now. Like he actually sets a screen and he rolls to the rim. And it's rare. Actually, the Heat guys do it when it's drawn up. Like Bam, well, you know,
the Heat play different than most NBA teams. They don't. They try not to be too trendy. They try to stay with They try to stay with their identity. You know, so I believe that's necessary in today's NBA.
Yeah, for sure. All right, before we wrap up, let's take a look. So, like I mentioned, starting tomorrow, Thursday, we got the Heat are going on their longest road trip since 2009, which is crazy. 7-game West Coast road trip, and there are no 7 games in 11 days, dude. No cakewalks. Houston, Utah, Clippers, Warriors, Kings, Lakers, Thunder.
You're going to find out a lot about this team and where they stand after that road trip.
tell everyone, because like I could talk about it all the time because I've been on road trips, but people are like, who are you? You didn't play. Talk about how tough this kind of road trip actually is for a team.
Yeah, it's very tough, but it's also one of those trips that brings you it can bring your team together. Because when you're on the road, it's all about you and the guys, nobody else. And so I think this will be a great test for them to see where they're at, where their game is at, where their mental fortitude is at, you know, where their team camaraderie is. And they'll be able to, after this road trip, we'll know a lot more about the Heat, and it'll be more clear if they do need to make a move or not as far as, you know, adjusting the roster.
7 games, right?
That's a lot of games.
The Heat are 10-14 right now. Now, obviously, you want to go win 7 games and have a 10-game win streak and all that, but seeing what they're going into a murderer's row right here, like what do we think? We think like, going 500 on this trip, 4-3 is a positive. Like what's a number where we're like, okay, obviously we just need them to play well.
Yeah. We want to take it one game at a time, but I would say if they went 4-3, that would be nice. That would be pretty good. 4-3 would be really good.
Yeah. I mean, cause maybe look,
even 5-2, but 4-3, I would think would be pretty good.
Like the one game where you're like, all right, we should win that game is the last game. And you know how that is.
The last game of the road trip is the hardest game.
Exactly. Cause you just want to go home. Right. Especially depending on what happened the first 6 games. Like if we're getting pounded out every night, we're like, all right, God, we just got to get home. The rest of these games are tough. We'll see what happens with Houston. If John Wall is not playing, which he's been in and out, like they're a different team without him right now. So that could be – that's TNT game too. So that's interesting. But we'll see. I feel like Houston – I mean, they're all winnable. But I feel like Houston, Sacramento, Oklahoma City are all very winnable. Golden State's playing better, but they're still – they're not Golden State.
Winnable, very winnable. Winnable.
But Utah, LA. That's Utah's the best record in the NBA right now.
But the crazy part is normally in situations like that, you normally play good against the good teams.
That's true.
You normally play well against the good teams, and then you find yourself in dogfights with
I'll also say this about the Lakers. Despite them being the best team in the league, and I believe that, and they have the second best record, the games I've watched, they still – look like they aren't totally playing. Like they look like they have a whole other gear that they could, like they look like any given night in the regular season right now they could get caught, and they almost did. I mean, they went to what, double overtime with the Pistons the other night. So like they just, the way they're playing right now, it looks like, I mean, they got a lot of new pieces and they look like they kind of are not, I don't want to say coasting, but they're still kind of going through the motions here and there.
Well, they're trying to create their habits
yeah
with this new team. You know, nothing happens overnight. And so they're beatable in the regular season. You know, they're trying to, their goal is obviously not the regular season though. Their goal is to get ready to play for the, you know, for all the marbles. And I think they're doing a great job out there, but they're definitely beatable for the regular season.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, man. Well, we'll see. I mean, I think next time this podcast will be recorded is next Tuesday. So that'll be about halfway through this road trip after the Houston, Utah Clipper game. So we'll actually probably know a decent amount after those three games. So appreciate you jumping back on again, man. Like this,
I mean, I appreciate
this,
you.
This is fun, man. I could talk to you about the Heat. Man, we could talk about the Heat every day, but I'll take once a week. I'll take once a week. Maybe we'll have you back. We'll see what happens. But either way, next Tuesday, I'll be back for sure. Norris, appreciate you coming on, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you. Shout out to Heat Nation.
Yeah, Heat Nation. And of course, obviously, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. Subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And we'll talk to you next week.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.